greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on crime is a growth industry when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, or the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. There's no wealth in employment. The money and wealth is in private business. The money and wealth is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's not in employment, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that we cash in on our inheritance and learn how to collect those benefits of the Old Covenant contract and to collect those benefits in property, real property, like gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless fiat paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD Home School for Adults, and while you're at it, order our free General Law CD package at the same time. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about crime. Crime is a growth industry. Crime is big business. Big business. That's where we're making an industry. Like the auto industry is big business, and the railroad industry is big business. These aren't small time, small potatoes. Education in this country is big business. And I mentioned that to you last time. We're talking about the education industry. And anytime there's a lot of money to be made, if there's an industry out here that's making a lot of money, government wants to get involved in it. For instance, the government was not involved in education, at least not our federal government, and indeed even the state governments weren't involved in education until the 1830s. And that's because when we look in the Bible, we find that education is a family affair. It's kind of like going to church, you know, or being baptized or going to communion. You could rest assured, if there was money to be made in baptism, that government would get into the baptism business. If there was money to be made in communion, you can rest assured that states would be offering communion. Because there was big money to be made in marriage, and so the government got involved in issuing marriage licenses, regulating and controlling families, child custody, divorce. You know, divorce is provided for in the Bible. There's a divorce statute. It's in Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. Divorce in this country is big business. I don't know that it's as big as the law enforcement business, but it's big business. Education's big business. I showed you that last time. $500 billion a year. The crime industry, sponsored by, promoted by, and used by government is a $41 billion a year industry. Now, it's, you know, we're starting to talk about some big bucks here. The law enforcement and the prison industry is an article put out by the JacksonProgressive.com. It's www.JacksonProgressive, all one word, .com. And here's what they tell us. Recent articles in the Clarion Ledger have pointed out the alarming increase in prison population and the long-term consequences of such policies. Here is the JP's view on this, together with a table of winners and losers, and you might be surprised by who wins and who loses. We now live in the lock-em-up society. Now, are we being prepared by this to accept a despotism? Now, almost 2 million adults will greet the new millennium in American prisons, and according to the Justice Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., that's another one you might want to jot down here, the Justice Policy Institute. If you go to Google and you do a search, I think Justice Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., they got a lot of articles here on the subject matter. In Washington, D.C., they said there are six times as many Americans behind bars as are imprisoned in the 12 countries that make up the entire European Union. Let's pause here for a moment. Think about that. 12 countries in the European Union. I think there's more than that now, but at the time this article was written, there was 12. We have more people locked up here in the United States than they have in the European Union, and they have a larger population. It's about 360 million. So you get a larger population in Europe with fewer people locked up in jail than you have in the United States. Shouldn't we ask ourselves, excuse me, boys and girls, but why do we have more people locked up here? Now, Russia is number one. They have more people locked up in Russia than we do here in the United States. But Russia is also a larger country than the United States with a greater population. When you take a look at the world as a whole, and the number of people that are locked up for crime here in the United States, not political prisoners, but just crime. And some of them probably might be political prisoners. We just locked up a former governor of Alabama here just recently. He was released here the other day as a Democrat. The Republicans got him and locked him up. But those are pretty rare. And what we're locking people up for in America is drug offenses. And as I pointed out, offenses that aren't even crimes in other countries. I mean, we're locking people up here in the United States for doing things that if you did this in France, it wouldn't be a crime. If you did this in Russia, it wouldn't be a crime. If you did this same act in Brazil, we wouldn't even waste time on it. And I've pointed that out. We're making crimes. For instance, drunk driving in America was not a crime when I was a kid. We've turned it into a crime. For social behavioral reasons, and maybe it's a good law. I'm not sitting here arguing about your laws. You know, if you think that's a good law, then that's probably fine. But I want to point out that it costs you a lot of money for these social engineering products or processes. In the 1920s, we wanted to change people's behavior. We wanted to get them to stop drinking alcohol, so we enacted a process or a program called Prohibition, called the Volstead Act. It didn't work then, and we're doing it now with drugs, with marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. It isn't working now. It didn't work with alcohol then. It isn't working with drugs now, and it costs a lot of money for a program that doesn't work. Are you really sure that you want to spend the money on it? Now, I'm not telling you what to spend your money on. Personally, if I had to choose between locking somebody up for smoking rope and spending $56 a day, the same amount of money on a carnival cruise, I think I would choose the carnival cruise. It's just my druthers, you know. Because I'm just not civic-minded enough to want to change somebody's behavior. If he's stupid and smokes cigarettes, I really don't care. Now, I'm not trying to change smokers' behavior. If the guy wants to smoke, give himself lung cancer and die, isn't that a choice that as an adult he ought to be able to make? But no, here in America, we have an anti-smoking policy. We want to change people's behavior. I'm not quite sure why we want to do that, but for some reason we do, and we're busily getting after it. So the purpose for this series of programs is to show you, well, this is what this is costing you. And I pointed out, every American is paying $1,666 a year for this. I mean, that's a lot of money. And we're taking that money out of your pocket, and then we're spending it building prisons and locking people up and doing all these neat things. And it isn't changing anybody's behavior. That's the bad part. I pointed out to you last time with education. I mean, you're spending $500 billion a year on education because you have it in your minds that ignorance is bad. So we're going to change people's social behavior. We don't want ignorant people in this country. Well, we're spending the $500 billion and they're still ignorant. In fact, they're more ignorant today than they were in 1850 when we weren't spending anything. And I also pointed this out. I said, you know, you can spend absolutely nothing and get stupid people. You don't have to spend $500 billion a year to turn somebody into a fool. You can do it free. And that's what I would like to recommend. I would like to close down all the public schools in America and leave everybody ignorant. Because that's where they're at now anyway. And the ones that don't want to be ignorant will go out and educate themselves. Which is what we were doing before we got off on this public works project called public education, which is just a sophisticated WPA. For school teachers who couldn't make a living in the real world. That's what the bottom line is. And those that can make a living in the real world are working for the Catholic Church or working for some private school, and they're teaching like I am. I'm an educator, and I'm in a private school. And I like education, and I like learning, and I like knowledge, and I have students that do the same. And we don't have any discipline problems here in this school. If you don't like it, there's the door. Don't let it hit you in the ass on the way out. That's the way we do business here. We're not forcing anybody to go to school. Public school forces everybody to go whether they want to or not. Most people don't want to. That's what the bottom line is. But anyway, there's a problem with this. We're locking up six times as many Americans as are in prison in the 12 countries that make up the entire European Union, even though those countries have 100 million more people than the United States. And if all these people, mostly American citizens, actually belong behind bars, then we can truthfully conclude that the American experience with democracy has failed past tense. That it has produced, instead of a law-abiding population, a large criminal class that threatens the remaining population and must be kept in check by long-term incarceration. Now, I pointed this out. In 1900, we had 1,666 people in our population, and one out of every 1,666 we locked up because he was a threat to society. Today it's one out of every 210. That's eight times more. So in the last 100 years, we have produced eight times more criminals in our population than we had in 1900. So why is that? Well, in 1900, if you wanted to smoke rope, you could. If you wanted to use cocaine and heroin, that's fine. No problem. Now, we've been propagandized by government, and we've been told all of our lives that this thing of using these drugs is bad for us. So let's think about this for a second. If using cocaine is bad for you, why does your medical doctor prescribe it, and why does Merck manufacture and market it? If heroin is bad for us, then why is it that the major manufacturers and your local drug pusher, the medical doctor, is selling it? And the same thing with marijuana. Marijuana, cocaine, and heroin are all available in prescription form from your family physician. They don't call it heroin, they don't call it cocaine, and they don't call it marijuana. They have their own names, their own brand names for these three drugs. All right. Now, on the television every night, they will come along and they will make an ad for a prescription drug and say, ask your doctor if Cialis is for you. And so they're making a pitch to get you to buy Cialis or to buy Viagra or to buy whatever this drug is that they're pushing. These are chemical concoctions that are highly dangerous, and they kill people, and they have god-awful side effects, and they're selling it to you people every day, and you love it. You're buying it every day. So let me ask you the question. Why is it that cocaine that is being sold and consumed down on the street corner is bad for people in America? Can you tell me why that is? I'll mull it over a little bit. Because the guy down on the street corner who's selling cocaine is selling it for 1/6 the price that the medical doctor is prescribing and selling it for. That's right. The street drugs, marijuana, cocaine, and heroin, are sold for 1/3 to 1/6 the retail price that you're paying down here at the Rexall drugstore when you get it from your doctor. So number one, the Colombian cartel can deliver cocaine much cheaper than Merck and Pfizer can. That's point number one. Point number two, if the American people can get these drugs from their medical doctor for 3 to 6 times more money, and it seems to be all right, good, and logical for you to use these drugs if the medical doctor prescribes it, can you tell me why it's bad for everybody else that buys it for 1/3 to 1/6 the price down on the street corner? And don't tell me now that these drugs are for health. They're not for health. They're selling sleep aids. You know, they come to you and they say, well, you know, if you can't get a good night's sleep, then why don't you try this drug or that drug? You know, it'll give you a good night's sleep. Those are called downers, and the reason that we take them is for the physiological effect. It's like we drink alcohol. It's for the effect. So you go to your doctor, and you don't say to your doctor, hey, listen, I'd like to get into the drug scene. Give me some downers for the physical effect. Hell no. You go to the doctor and you say, well, doc, I've got insomnia and I can't sleep. Oh, gosh, we've got this downer over here and we have a brand name for it and we'll sell it to you for this amount of money. And you don't have any shortage of doctors that'll prescribe downers or uppers or whatever the hell you want. America is a nation of drug addicts. If you're over 65, you're on six. Now, of course, we say to everybody, because we don't want to come to people and say, well, I'm a drug addict and I need to go down to the doctor and get my prescription filled. We say, oh, I've got this bad health. Oh, Agnes, you've got bad health. Well, you should go to the doctor and get a prescription filled. See, we do it for health. Well, that's what our claim is. That's not true, but we kid ourselves and we pretend that it's for health. Just like we put cameras up in busy intersections to take pictures of people and say, well, it's for traffic safety. Hell no, it's not for traffic safety. That's for income and revenue generation. That's what it's for. It doesn't have anything to do now with safety. We talked about that a little earlier. So we lie to ourselves a lot so that we can justify what we're doing. Let's take another one over here. Back in the early 1900s, there was an operation called the Numbers Racket. Numbers. You ever heard that? Maybe you went to the James Cagney movies, you know, and he was playing the part of a mobster. Then they had rackets. And these rackets, one of them was called the Numbers Racket. That's where you picked out 6 numbers, you know, on a card. And then they would roll some balls, and then if your 6 numbers came up, they'd pay you a lot of money. And people played the numbers racket. Well, a judge back in 1900, he described that process as being one of the most evil, wicked, awful, wretched criminal activities ever thunk up by the mind of man. He wrote a hell of a treatise. I read the treatise in an opinion that he wrote while he was convicting some guy, or sentencing, I guess it was a sentencing, some guy for operating a numbers racket in New York. Now, here's our question. Why is it that the numbers racket, when it's run by some private operation like the Cosa Nostra, or the mob, or the underworld, the criminal elements, is bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil? But if it's run for the state of New York, it's righteous, holy, just, and good. Can you explain that to me? Why it takes the food out of little babies' mouths in 1900 when it's being run by private enterprise, but if it's being run by a socialist state interest to promote, of all things, public education, which is another state business, that it's holy, righteous, just, and good. Can you write me a letter and explain it to me, would you? Now, what this really boils down to is that the mob, that's the Cosa Nostra, that is the mafia, that is private enterprise, is a competitive factor to government, and government doesn't like competition. That's why they don't like private schools and homeschools, and that's why we have laws on the books to discourage you from educating your child at home, to discourage you from educating your child in public school. For instance, let's suppose that government and you and I and everybody are only interested in the educational well-being of a child. And so the government then provides public school for all the poor people who cannot afford to send their children to private school. All right, then that would be pretty magnanimous and altruistic. The government could then say, well, you know, we want everybody to be educated because we think it's a good public policy. And if you want to educate your kid in Catholic school, that's fine. If you want to educate your kid in public school, that's fine. So what we do for the people that send their children to parochial or private school, we make them pay taxes to support the public school system. Then they have to pay the tuition to educate their child in private school. Then we don't give them a corresponding tax deduction because they're educating their child and paying for it through the nose. We make them pay twice, which discourages people from sending their children to private school. Now, why do we do that? It's because we want to stamp out private school in America. That's what we're really trying to do. If you're a government official, if you're a school teacher, if you're a school administrator, a private school is competition. And everybody that goes to one of those private schools is taking bread right out of the mouth of the teacher in the public school system. And they don't like that. They don't want it. And they're trying to stamp it out. Every parent who educates his child at home is taking $56 a day out of the public school system. Remember I gave you that number? It's $55.55. All right. So it's actually business. It's actually competition. It's what it is. But we don't want to say that to people. So we lie to ourselves, and we lie to people, and the news media lies to us, just like we do with drugs. We say, well, it's for the benefit of the public. It's for our health. No, it isn't. It's for your recreation. And you call it health. That camera at the busy intersection, it's not there for traffic safety. It's there for revenue generation. Why don't we just call a spade a spade? We've been lying to ourselves in this country for so long. Hell, we're beginning to believe our own press releases, crying out loud. We believe the lies that we're propagating. Now, we want to control all of this crime, see? And so the government comes to us and says, well, we got this terrible problem out here. Drunk drivers. Well, drunk drivers weren't a problem in 1920. And then here's why. Let me point something out to you. It is true that if somebody is drunk, driving down the street, has an accident and kills somebody, it could be caused by the alcohol. It could be. Doesn't necessarily have to be. Let me give you an illustration. There was a farmer one time, he's driving home in New Mexico in an old pickup. He's driving along, he's drunk. He had a good time, he was out the bar and he's drunk. He's got a bottle of whiskey in his back pocket. And he's driving down the road, going home, and a doctor and his wife and his two children, I think they're about 11 and 13, as I recall, from California, going on holiday from California, driving to Florida. I think they were going to Disney World out in Florida. Is driving down the road in the opposite direction. Well, you know, you can just about picture what's coming up. There's a head-on crash between this drunk farmer and this doctor with his beautiful wife and two beautiful daughters. And listen to this. The doctor is killed, his wife is killed, and the two children are killed in this head-on crash. But the farmer, the drunk, doesn't get killed. He survives the crash. Fortunately, the police come and they test the farmer. He's the lone survivor, and they find out he's drunk. So they arrested him, prosecuted him for drunk driving, and then locked him up in prison for 10 years. And you're sitting there saying, well, good for the police. All right, now, here's what happened. The doctor fell asleep at the wheel. He'd been driving for so long, you know, he got tired. And he fell asleep at the wheel, crossed the center line, hit the drunk farmer head on, killed himself, his wife, and the two children. The farmer was on his side of the road. He's driving down the road, doing his thing, drunk. All right, now, to lock this guy up for $56 a day for 10 years, let's just try this, 56 times 365 times 10 cost $204,000 to lock this drunk up. But he didn't cause the accident. So what was the point? See, here in America, we have the idea that if you're a drunk driver, you need to be locked up. Think about it. And I'm sitting here saying, why? Because if we went to the Bible and we looked at God's solution to the problem, there's no law against drunk driving. There's a law against negligence. There's a law against wrongful death. In this case, the doctor, under the Mosaic law, the doctor's estate would have to pay for all of the damages caused to the drunk farmer. I know all you socialists and communists are sitting out there saying, well, that ain't right. Well, that's your view of the law enforcement crime industry. But the God of the Bible has a different view of crime and punishment. But that's my point. And that we used to practice that here in the United States. We used to practice the biblical format. For instance, in the Bible, there are no prisons, no penal system, none, zero. There's crime and there's punishment under the Mosaic Code, but there's no prisons and there's no penal system and there's no penance. That's your Christian religion coming up with that. There's crime and punishment, but there's no prisons. It's a little different program, and I outlined that to you. I said, he's got 24 capital crimes, 24 crimes that are punishable by death. He has a system in the Bible of you could be burned to death, stoned to death, hanged. You could be whipped. You could be excommunicated. You could have your hand cut off. You could die childless. You could have something done to you that you did to somebody else. You could have a forced marriage. We call them shotgun weddings here. You could go into national captivity. You could have a loss of your benefits. You could be fined. You could have to pay restitution. You could suffer from a sore sickness, a disease, or a plague, or a swelled belly. You could pay an eye for an eye. You could be punished with a tooth for a tooth. You could have your hand cut off for a hand that you cut off of somebody else. You could pay with your life for somebody else's life that you took. You could lose your foot. You could be burned, a burn for a burn. You could be wounded for a wound. You could be striped for a stripe. You could lose your slaves. You could be forced into a city, a refugee city for a number of years. You could be thrown into the lake of fire. You could have whatever it was you thought to do to somebody else done to you. That's 29. 29 different ways of punishing people, and not one prison sentence out of 29. So that's what the creator of the universe thinks about your penal system for correction. It hasn't worked in the past. It is not working now. And there's not any prospect of it working in the future. And that's because the penal system is a total failure. It doesn't work, isn't working, and won't in the future, and costs a lot of money. But you're not going to change it. Oh no. I'm not here to suggest that you vote for somebody and we're going to change the penal system in America. Tain't going to happen. And it doesn't make any difference how you vote. You're not going to change the Internal Revenue System. You're not going to change the Federal Reserve. You're not going to change the educational system, and you're not going to change the penal system. And that's because all of the political processes in America are aimed at these money-making governmental activities. And the people who are in control of these have spent years and years and a lot of money, time, effort, and energy creating these institutions. So I didn't come here with some agenda trying to get you to vote so that we can change this. I just wanted to alert you to the fact that this is the way it works. Now, if you want to continue on supporting it, paying for it, working with it, get after it. But there's a better way. And I looked at it years ago and I said, I don't think I want to participate in this. So I dropped out of this IRS tax thing. I went from public business, which everybody's engaged in, to private business. And we're not advocating tax protests here. I'm not saying, you know, that you ought to quit paying your taxes. You know, if you owe taxes, you ought to pay them. But there's another thought here while we're thinking about taxes. If you didn't have any income, how much income tax would you owe? Have you thought about stopping your income? I know all you socialists and communists are sitting out there saying, well, how would you live? And the answer is very well, thank you. Because before we had income, we had property, and property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States. And I think working for property instead of income is more profitable in the long run, if you want to use that word property and profit. Now, if we took a look at this and we applied this to crime and punishment over here, if we were to practice the Ten Commandments instead of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, we would have a different outcome. Something would be different. Because in 1900, we practiced more of the Ten Commandments and less of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, and we locked up 8 times less people. Well, my common sense then says to me, if we're now locking up 8 times more people practicing communism, if we continue on with communism, and crime grows at 5% a year, crime will double every 14.7 years. It has for the last 100 years, and that's what the numbers tell us. And pretty soon, instead of 1 out of every 210, we can have 1 person out of every 100. Then we can have 1 person out of every 50. Then 1 person out of every 25. And then 1 person out of every 12 locked up in jail. Listen, if locking more people up so that we can employ more people, make more money for the law enforcement growth industry is our objective, we're on the right track. We can't lose. We can't miss. It's in the bag. Question that I'm asking is that really what you want to buy? Because I don't take any great pleasure in locking more people up and creating more and more crimes out of things that weren't crimes in the past. Like, you don't buckle your seatbelt. That's a crime today. I'm sitting here saying, why? And so, you know, you can say, well, because the guy's rude and obnoxious, and he's dumb, and he's a jerk. Okay, so do you want to punish rude, obnoxious, dumb jerks? Do we want to call those people criminals and lock them up? Because that's what we're doing, and if that's what you want, well, get after it. You're a total success. If you want to spend your money building prisons and locking people up, well, I guess that's as good a program for spending money, I guess, as any. You know, some people spend their money burning up airplane gas. And we Americans want to spend our money building prisons and locking people up. I guess whatever turns you on. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, just call the law school and ask for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use in this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. We'll tell you more. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Just ask us, you know, what in the hell are you all about anyway? All right, we're talking about crime is a growth industry. Crime makes a lot of money for a lot of people. There are certain people out here in the world that like crime because they make money off of it. And primarily, they're government officials. Prison guards, judges, prosecutors, probation officers, and contractors that are out here building prisons. And if you'd like a report, it comes from www.jacksonprogressive.com. That's a good one. www.jacksonprogressive.com, the law enforcement and prison industry. And then there's an outfit called the Justice Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. If you go to the search engine, I think you can get their address. It isn't on this report that I've got here in front of me. And I'll tell you a little bit more about the law enforcement growth industry. Now, with few exceptions, such as violent criminals, locking up people will not make us safer. There is little relationship between large-scale incarceration and the crime level. But there is a very direct relationship between the harshness of the criminal code and the liberty of our citizens. Now, are we being conditioned to accept this kind of despotic regime? Now, the punishing decade, prison and jail estimates at the millennium, a report by the Justice Policy Institute. Americans Behind Bars, the International Use of Incarceration, is a well-researched study by the Lind Smith Center's Sentencing Project for the Relationship between the actual prevalence of crime and incarceration rates. And the main findings are as follows. Russia, number one here, Russia has now surpassed the United States to become the world leader in its rate of incarceration, with 558 citizens per 100,000 population in its prison system. The rise of organized crime, political instability, and the transition to an uncertain economic future have all played a factor in crime rates and the use of imprisonment. Two. With 1.3 million Americans behind bars, the U.S. rate of incarceration is 519 per 100,000, second in the world among the 52 nations covered in the survey. The United States rate has increased by 22% since 1989 and is generally 5 to 8 times the rate of most industrialized nations. And a racial breakdown of the U.S. inmate population shows that African Americans are incarcerated at a rate that is more than 6 times that of whites, 1,947 per 100,000 compared to 306 per 100,000 for whites. Black males in the United States are incarcerated at more than 4 times the rate of black males in South Africa, 3,822 per 100,000 versus 851 per 100,000. Now, the cost of incarceration nationally in the United States is estimated at $26.8 billion annually. Estimated costs of incarceration for African American males are $11.6 billion annually. Now, the number of African American males in prisons and jails in the U.S., 583,000. Is greater than the number of African American males enrolled in higher education, which is 537,000. Drug, property, and public order offenders accounted for 84% of the 155% increase in new court commitments in state prison from 1980 to 1992, while violent offenders accounted for only 16% of the increase. So let me pause here and make an observation, and that is these numbers come to us about 8 years ago, it's about the year 2000. The United States has now surpassed Russia with the number of people that we lock up. And notice here that the purpose for locking these up is for social purposes rather than violent crime. So we have all these people out here using these illegal drugs. So we want to lock them up in jail. The truth of the matter is, these people probably could not afford these same three drugs, cocaine, heroin, and marijuana, if they had to buy them down at the local Rexall pharmacy, because they cost anywhere from 3 to 6 times more money. So they buy them down on the street corner because the drug cartels can, through the free enterprise system, through the marketplace, produce it and sell it. And the reason that the U.S. government is so up in arms about these illegal drugs doesn't have anything to do with you or I. It has to do with the major pharmaceutical companies and the competition that these illegal drugs make. You see, the reason that we stamp out the lottery from the mob is because there's a lot of money to be made on the lottery, and the government wants to make that money. And they don't want competition, so they stamp it out. So government creates monopolies. They have a monopoly in education. They have a monopoly in prisons. They have a monopoly in the lottery. You know, if you stop and think about it, government is a big business. Government is engaged in all of the businesses that are prohibited in the Bible. You know, businesses, you know, like prostitution. Yeah, the government, our United States government, is engaged in prostitution. Did you know that? They encourage it, they foster it, and they tax it. I'll show you why in a minute. You see, in the underworld, in the mob, in the mafia, the Cosa Nostra, see, we would call it the numbers racket. But in society, in governmental circles, we call it the lottery. So, you know, us above ground guys, you know, us guys that run around going to church and all that kind of crap, we call that the lottery as opposed to the numbers racket. Same program. Takes the same amount of money. Got the same odds. It's gambling. Prohibited in the Bible. And I bet a lot of you people are out here buying lottery tickets and going to church. All right, prostitution. See, we call it white slavery. Prostitution is promoted by government. God prohibits prostitution and has prescribed that prostitutes and their customers be stoned to death. Yeah. the law of God requires that you take all prostitutes and stone them to death, and all the people that go to prostitutes and use their services be stoned to death. Now, that's not kind and gentle, is it? And besides that, doesn't make any money. So what we do in this country is we round up the whores every once in a while, and we bring them in and prosecute them, and then we fine them and put them back out on the street so that we can collect the tax from them, because most prostitutes aren't out getting a business license, you know, like the rest of us do. See, the prostitutes are in a private business, doing business in cash. They're not paying their income tax. They're not paying their business license. It's an unfair competitive advantage to the rest of us normal businessmen. And we just hate it. So we support these crackdowns on prostitution. Not because we want to stamp out prostitution now, because it's immoral, or because it has some negative effect on society, which it does. But let's take loan sharking. See, if the mob is loaning money and charging interest, that's loan sharking. But if a bank does that, and we call it credit cards or a title loan, well, it puts all the respectability back into it. And so let me tell you about these title loans in this state. This is Missouri now. They charge 9.9% interest per month. That's 118% interest per year. Does anybody know what the Cosa Nostra or the loan sharks of New York charge as an interest rate? Do they charge 118% a year? I don't know. I never did make a loan with a loan shark, so I can't tell you firsthand, you know, what their interest rate is, but I have never heard of such a preposterous interest rate. I thought 30% was just ghastly. Hell, the banks charge 30% now, and they have licenses issued by government. Now, isn't that loan sharking? I mean, 30% interest, you know, 50 years ago was called loan sharking. Today we call it credit cards. Isn't the interest rate 30% still loan sharking, just carried on by a different cartel, Bank of America and Citicorp and J.P. Morgan Chase, as opposed to the Godfather? I don't know. Now, people in America, we can accept banks and credit cards and title loan companies, but loan sharking? Oh my God, stamp it out and lock those guys up. So we're not opposed to loan sharking. Americans are not opposed to 118% interest. No matter who it damages, we're not opposed to that. What we're opposed to in this country is the business entity or interest that's carrying on this activity. Americans, you people are not opposed to drugs. You're a nation of drug addicts. 80% of Americans are taking a prescription drug right now. 80%! And if you're 65, you're taking 6! This holier-than-thou, we're opposed to drugs, and we got a drug war going on over here, is hypocrisy on a level that defies any reason, logic, and common sense. My God, 80% of your population's taking drugs. Well, you people buy drugs over the counter, for crying out loud. You're legalizing drugs that were prescription drugs 10 years ago. You're buying them over the counter. That's why they make these methamphetamines. They just go into the drugstore and buy the stuff and take it home and cook it. All right. Now, the government doesn't like that, and so they're cracking down on that because they don't want private enterprise making these drugs. They don't want some guy making methamphetamines over on his cook stove. But these same methamphetamines are available from your doctor, for crying out loud. You know, as long as you pay 6 times more down at Rexall, it's legal. You buy them for 6 times less from Joe down on the corner, and we just get mad as hell. And we'll lock people up and pay $56 a day. Now, I'm not opposed to you drug addicts out there. Americans are drug addicts, and if you want to take your drugs, that's fine. I don't care. I just wanted to remind you that locking up their competitors over here is a business transaction. It doesn't have anything to do with law and order. It doesn't have anything to do with society or with the protection of society. It has to do with the protection of a market. And so government and the pharmaceutical industry and the American Medical Association are in a program to stamp out competition. Let's brand it what it is. We got another one here. It's called a protection racket. Do you know what a protection racket is in society? It's called insurance. And your government comes along and says, you have to buy auto insurance. And if you don't buy auto insurance, we're going to criminalize it. We're going to fine you, take your car away from you, take your driver's license away from you, and lock you up in jail. I've been locked up for not having insurance on my car. I've had the policeman put me in handcuffs and haul my hiney right off to jail because I didn't buy insurance. And that's why most of you buy insurance, because you don't want to be hauled off to jail. Now, I got to ask you, I mentioned this the other day, I got to ask you, why do you want to lock people up in jail because they don't want to buy insurance? Do we want to lock people up in jail because they don't buy a new digital television? I mean, you know, they got a new program here in the United States. They're changing over from the regular television. I'm not a television or an electronics man, so I can't describe this to you the way I guess it ought to be, but we just got notice here. They're telling us about every day over the telly here that on February the 17th, 2009, there's going to be a big change here in the United States. And you have to have this new DVD, DHD, CBS, or whatever it is, television sets. It's going to be bigger, better, and so on. So now we got to go out and buy a new television set. See? That's great for the television manufacturers. God, I just can't tell you. I wish I had a deal like that, where by February the 19th, you have to sign up for the Gordon Law School, and if you don't, well, God help you. I think that's a hell of a program. And I can't blame the monopolists at all, you know. I mean, you know, as long as people will buy into this program, I guess it's all right. Now, we did that with insurance. You see, we said, now, you know, we're going to pass this law, and you have to go out and buy auto insurance, and if you don't buy this auto insurance, well, we're going to punish you, lock you up in jail, take your car, and do all these bad, wicked, terrible, awful things to you. Okay, if you can do that to people over auto insurance, can't we do that over health insurance? Life insurance? Television sets? Carpet? Automobiles? See, we call that fascism in Italy, Germany, Russia, China, communism. Here in America, we call it capitalism, righteousness, good works, common sense. I don't know, kids. It's up to you. Now, street drugs is what we call it if you buy it on the street. But if you go into your Rexall store or your Walmart store, we call it prescription drugs from the pharmacy. Street drugs versus prescription drugs. Aren't drugs drugs? Don't drugs have side effects? Aren't drugs bad for people? What I can't figure out is, why is cocaine bad for you if you buy it from Joe on the street corner, but it's good for you if you buy it from Dr. Welby? I'm trying to figure that one out, kids. Now, all of the above are banned by God. I want to point out that the mob, the underworld, the numbers racket, prostitution, loan sharking, protection racket, street drugs, thefts, and shakedowns, hits and hit men and drug pushers and Murder Incorporated. Hell, those are all banned by God. And rightly so. But just because we call it the lottery, white slavery, credit cards, title loans, insurance, Rexall or Walmart, prescription drugs, banking, war, assassinations, medical doctors, and it's done by the CIA, doesn't make it legal, does it? Doesn't make it right or righteous or good for us, does it? Because we change the name. For instance, you know, when the Godfather orders a hit, he goes to his organization called Murder Incorporated, orders a hit. We say, oh my God, that's wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. Now, when the United States government, through the CIA, orders an assassination, well, that's in the national interest. Well, that's for national security. Why, that's a good plan. If the Russians do it, it's wicked and evil. If the Americans do it, it's all a part of the war on terror. My God, isn't the guy just as dead? Isn't murder murder? Or is it something else if it's done by the CIA? If the United States government conducts torture in Guantanamo, is it something different than the Russians doing torture in Russia, or the Chinese doing torture? Isn't that a human rights violation? What is a human rights violation anyway? Could you tell me? Write me an email. Tell me. Can you tell me what a human rights violation is? Now, here in America, we are the world's number one hypocrites. And you know, kids, most of the people in the world know that. And the Muslims are sitting over there saying, you know, those Americans are a bunch of damn hypocrites. And they're over here trying to tell us how to live our lives. They got their nose stuck right up in our business, right up to the bridge of their nose. That's why people around the world don't like us. Now, it isn't that the average American is doing this either, you people out there in the rest of the world. It's our bankers and our politicians and our insurance companies and our executives that come out of our colleges and universities. Those are the people that are in control of our government. Hell, the average Joe Sixpack American, we don't have any control over our government at all. None. Zero. Hell, you people in China probably have as much or more control over your government than we have over our government here in the United States. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all that people in China probably have just about the same. It's near nothing, but then you got near nothing in the way of control over your government. And you're going to say, well, we can vote. Hell, the people in Russia vote. The people in China vote. Except that they don't play hypocritical games. They just have one party. That's all. You're going to vote for Bill. Here in the United States, you can vote for Hillary, Barack, or John. But they all work for the same committee of 300. Boys and girls, when you elect Hillary Clinton president, do you think she's going to abolish the Federal Reserve System, the IRS, or change the prison system in America? Do you believe that? None of this is going to be changed by Hillary or Barack or John or anybody else. And that's because this is big business. And so I'm bringing this to your attention because maybe, just maybe, there might be 5 or 10 of us out here that say, hey, look, why don't we drop out of this crap like the hippies did back in the 50s. Says, let's drop out. I think that's a good plan. So I did that some years back. I said, hell, I think I'll just drop out of this. I'm not opposed to the income tax. Don't call me a tax protester. I think everybody that wants to pay the income tax ought to get out there and do it. But I don't want to do it, so I quit. And I quit by stopping having any income. It's a wild new concept. We have a lot of wild new concepts here at the law school. Yeah, I'm about out of time again, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here on this program that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. We'll have to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.